Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recording.
Hello, Chicago!
Put that coffee down.
Pete McMurray in the Allstate Showcase Studios in for John Williams. Boy, I love Saturdays, man. This is fun. Tons of people on Michigan Avenue. We got a great show today. Coming up at 10:20, they're going to lay to rest Barbara Bush. We'll check in with Jim Ryan from ABC News, live from Houston. There's a great new book out called What's Up with Chicago. Ellen Schubert will be in studio talking about that. Why don't we put ketchup on our hot dogs? Please tell me you guys don't put ketchup on your hot dogs. Domitee, Griff, please.
How dare you ask such a question, Pete?
Gotta ask. There's some people that work here at WGN that do.
I don't begrudge anyone that does, but I do not know.
Oh, Griff.
I don't do such a thing.
Griff.
Griff, are you from this country?
This What's city? Wrong with you?
It's really just the city. Everybody else is fine with it.
I know, right?
Right, it's outside the city limits.
American cities.
Yes. My 12-year-old, when he turned 9, I told him, Charlie, no more ketchup. No more ketchup on your hot dog. You got to get rid of it.
At 9?
At 9 years old.
That's young.
Yeah. So he doesn't do it. Doesn't do it anymore. So we'll talk to Ellen about that. And 11 o'clock, 11:05, Kevin Nealon from Last Man Standing. You remember him from SNL. He's in town tonight doing two shows at City Winery. He'll be stopping by the Allstate Showcase Studios. All right. Doma T, I can't believe we finally worked together.
Finally. This is a treat.
This is our first time, right?
I think I had one.
You may have done one or two on Cochran while I was filling it.
Yeah, really, really quick, though. You know, it's different on a Saturday. We're at home. I get a full 2 hours with you. I never get a chance to really kick it with you, Pete. I'm excited.
I'm a big Saturday listener. I love listening to Lou Saturday mornings. Love listening to John. One of my favorite segments is when John and Griff just talk about things.
Yes.
And Doma T and Joe.
I'm right. Yeah. It's nice. Yeah.
We have a good time.
It's good stuff. Today is record store day. Is anybody stopping by a record store?
I didn't have plans to.
I didn't know they still existed.
So we're bad record store day.
Reckless Records at Broadway and Belmont will be packed today. You guys, you see, you're too young. You don't
understand.
We're
millennials, that's why.
You don't understand what it was like to buy an album, to wait 2 or 3 years for an artist to come out with a record. Then on a Tuesday, you would hop in your car or you'd hop on the bus and go to a record store and you'd hold that album in your hands. Do you hear the passion in my voice talking about records? God, I love it.
We didn't miss it completely. I look forward to the physical copy of the CD, which is not the same.
It's not the same.
But it would still meant something to me, sure.
One of the things, you'd put the record on, you'd lift the arm so it would play over and over, but reading the liner notes and then talking to your friends about it, you'd all sit there and you'd talk, oh my gosh, they recorded this at the record plant in New York City, or I wonder what Springsteen was thinking when he wrote this lyric.
I do really agree with that. I miss flipping through CD books. And finding out, looking through lyrics and looking at the thank yous and seeing what song they sampled. We don't get that anymore with the streaming right now.
God, I loved it.
Everything feels a little less collectible. It's less of a hobby, you know, like holding on to that thing. No, that's what today is all about.
I had thousands of albums growing up, and I still have probably 40 that just sit in my basement. I can't get rid of them. Because everyone has meaning. Okay, Born to Run, I had this. My first girlfriend in high school. Rolling Stones, Hot Rocks, got to hold on to that. Yeah, there's certain things that's, you know, it's like part of your childhood growing up. But you
really
guys,
is.
I mean, you guys missed it.
We did.
I mean, look what I'm doing with my hands. It's like I'm holding an album. An album was just, it was huge. Yeah, it's just hard to explain. It brought people together. It was a big deal.
Now, what do you think about the sound, Pete? Because I have a record player, But my mom's record player is really old school. This one I have has a Bluetooth capability, and it's almost too clear when I play my records on it. I kind of like the static that you kind of hear on my mom's right. record player, the cackling. Is that something you miss, too, or am I being too artistic in that?
No. I mean, people love that sound, and there's purists out there that are listening right now that still have record players, and they put the little penny right on the needle. So it kind of digs into the record. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I miss that stuff.
We missed the first run, obviously, but we're here for the resurgence. It's the revival. Because you said you have one, right, Domati, a record player?
Yeah, I've got one.
My I'm brother just... and his wife just got one. They're building their record collection now. I know.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? I wasn't allowed.
I know, man. It's okay.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying to be hipsters.
I'm trying to meet you there. Sorry.
It just wasn't the album, though. It was the experience. And I think it was that time. It's hard to explain to you guys that you'll never really understand, but the album came out, and you got the album, and you listened to the album, you read the liner notes, and then you had to go to a venue, the actual venue, and wait in line for tickets. And sometimes you would go the night before. Think about that.
You guys went places and did stuff?
Now I sound like my father.
Watching.
Well, you know, there was a time where we waited in line to buy tickets.
Watch Beyonce at Coachella
and 80s.
From my bed, it's fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, I don't know, it brings back such great memories. And record store day, I like to go because I used to spend hours and hours just looking at albums at record stores. And it reminds us year after year. So today is record store day. You can bring it up on your phone, just bring it up on Yelp, but I'm going to stop by Reckless Records today at Broadway and Belmont. Yeah, and it'll be jam-packed. And they do have special albums that only come out today.
Wow.
And every single year I buy them, and where do they sit, guys? In my basement.
After that impassioned speech, that's where they are.
Well, you got to think, if they really loved the songs that are on that one, they might make it available a couple other days of the year, too. I don't know.
You're right.
No, I'm not trying to hate on Record Store Day. I love it.
312-981-7200, our phone number, also our text line. Now, Griff, you're the movie guy, and I enjoy listening to you and your father talk about movies.
Thank you.
What did you see this week? Because I have a 12-year-old. All I did this week is run around to basketball and volleyball. Didn't have time to see any movies.
Yeah, sorry about that. Although it sounds great. John talked about A Quiet Place, that scary movie, on his show during the week a little bit, I think. I saw that, too. Do you know anything about that?
Did you just refer to your father as John?
Well, John, yeah, that's his name.
Right. I mean, you're your dad. Yeah.
I like to keep it a little professional.
That's with John Kaczynski, right?
Krasinski.
Krasinski.
Yeah.
He wrote and directed that movie.
That's right. He starred on The Office. And,
yeah, yeah. Dean Richards loved it.
It was very fun.
Okay.
Very scary. You wouldn't expect that he had that in him. He's made a couple movies before this, and they were kind of stinkers, so he went into the cave and decided to go the horror route.
Now, there's not much dialogue, right?
No, barely any speaking at all. I think everybody knows by now, but there's these monsters, and if they hear anything, they can't see, but they can hear really well, so if you make noise, they come for you. And so they have to communicate mostly with sign language.
Okay.
So there's not much speaking, but it's also not as... I think people talk about it as if it's like a really quiet movie, and I actually thought it was louder than I expected. Like, the sound design and... sound effects are like very loud. That's how they get you. That's the jump scares. So
right.
It wasn't as quiet an experience as I actually thought it would be. Although there's some times where like rustling of containers and stuff in the audience is very noticeable. But
really, that would be me.
It was unique in the way that it played with that, and I thought it was a good time. Maybe a little bit overrated, but still worth checking out.
Now, you had a question that you wanted to ask on the air.
Did I?
About movies. A question that they had in the AV club.
Oh yeah, did you look through that?
I didn't, but tell me about it.
It was like the AV club does these Q&A things where they ask all their writers on that website a question, they all respond with their answer. So it was, what is a thing that happens all the time in movies and TV that has never actually happened to you in life, and you suspect doesn't happen very much at all? Like, for instance, one of the answers, I think, well, what immediately popped to mind for me was when somebody in a movie or a TV show says, I'll buy a round of drinks for the bar. I don't know if anybody put that in their answer. I didn't make it all the way to the bottom. But when that happens in a show, mm-hmm. It stresses me out so much. because like there's like 50 people there.
I love it. I've done that one time in my life.
You have?
Yeah, it's fun.
It has happened then. I just always assume there's no way anybody's actually done that, unless you're like a billionaire.
Well, I mean, if there's 20 people in the bar and you buy 20 beers, it's not that,
that is
much
not,
money.
That is not feasible for me at this, this point in my life.
So you recommend that movie, A Quiet Place?
A Quiet Place, yeah. I also saw Lean on Pete. It was a movie about a boy and his horse. It was a smaller release. It was about the saddest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, God.
And I highly recommend it. I think it'll also be one of the best movies of the year. But just be ready for something outrageously sad.
I need happy.
Well, then see Blockers. I also saw Blockers with John Cena, the wrestler.
Sure.
And Leslie Mann, the comedy.
I love Leslie Mann. Judd Apatow's wife. She's great in everything she does.
And she's great in this. It looked like insanely stupid from the trailers, but then I heard a couple of things about how good it was, and it was. I laughed my head off.
So three good movies.
Good ones out there, and there's more.
Don't go see the sad one. And speaking of sad, Barbara Bush passed away this week. We'll check in with Jim Ryan from ABC News coming up next, live from Houston at 720 WGN.
She had great faith. She truly believes that she is there's an afterlife, that she'll be wonderfully received in the arms of a loving God, and therefore did not fear death. And as a result of her soul being comforted on the deathbed, my soul is comforted.
1023, Barbara Bush passed away this week at the age of 92. The outpouring of love and support for the former First Lady, pretty amazing. She's being laid to rest today in Houston. Joining us from ABC News in Houston, it's Jim Ryan. Jim, even though she was 92, when I heard the news, I was even sad. I mean, everyone loved this woman.
I think everybody could kind of look to her as their own grandmother, in a way, whether you've had a grandmother or not. She seemed to epitomize that. She was everybody's grandmother, Pete, with the white hair and the pearls, the blue dress, always a little more formal than other people in the room. And I think that's the way that people remember her, a warmth that came from her, both in person and on TV. And I think that's why so many people are left with that impression. People have begun to arrive at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Houston, the church that Mrs. Bush and her husband attended for more than 50 years. The ceremony will include, many VIPs, former presidents, their spouses. The actual burial happens in College Station, which is about 100 miles away. There will be about a 2.5-hour funeral procession from here in Houston out to the burial site at the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library, Pete.
Wow. President Clinton and George H.W. Bush became friends, very good friends, over the years. So you're going to have President Clinton there. I'm sure President Obama will be there. Who else are we looking at?
Yes, those two will be there. George W. Bush, of course, there,
right,
the former president here for his mother. The Carters will not be here, the only other living president, because Rosalind Carter is having some health issues of her own, nothing too serious, apparently. But, it really cuts across party lines as well. Gabby Giffords, the former Arizona congresswoman, is here with her husband, Mark Kelly, the former NASA astronaut. There are luminaries coming in from all over the country. They're being arriving by bus at this moment. They're parking at a church about 3 miles away from the site of the funeral and then coming in by chartered buses. So the church beginning to fill up. The ceremony starts in 35 minutes. We're told that it will last about an hour, and then this long funeral procession leading out to College Station, Pete.
2.5-hour procession. I just wanted to say that again because you mentioned that. At 2.5 hours. So the invitation-only funeral will finish, and then they'll have a 2.5-hour procession leading to the gravesite. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, a small group will leave here. The family, I suspect, will be the only ones. In fact, it's a private family burial at the Bush Library. Mm-hmm. There at the library, the presidential library, there's a small cemetery behind there, a burial ground. There is only one interment there at this point. That's Robin Bush, the daughter of Barbara Bush and George H.W. Bush. She is lying there. Her mother will lie next to her later today. The only other name on the headstone in that cemetery is that of George H.W. Bush.
Don Matisse, say hello to Jim Ryan from ABC News.
Jim, it's good to talk to you this morning, and thank you for taking the time to join us. I'm wondering, what will her legacy be as a First Lady? How will we describe the impact of Mrs. Barbara Bush?
Well, I think every First Lady tries to have a cause, Dilma, and hers was literacy, and her daughter-in-law picked that up as well. Laura Bush continued on with a theme of literacy and of education. I think that will formally be her legacy. But the other thing is less tangible, I think. It's that sort of air that she had, that feeling of elegance and a grandmotherly or matronly feeling for a lot of us who grew up watching her and now are going to have to do without her. So I think her legacy will be one of warmth and of a first lady who wasn't afraid to speak her mind. She didn't necessarily toe her husband's line or the Republican Party's line. She had different views on abortion, on gay rights, on the Equal Rights Amendment that didn't necessarily jibe with those of her husband.
She spoke her mind, didn't she, Jim?
She did, absolutely, and was unafraid to do so.
And I do want to mention, yesterday they had a public viewing, and over 2,500 people walked through, and George H.W. Bush was there shaking their hands.
Yes, many more than that, in fact, went through. They were thinking that about 2,000 could be accommodated per hour, and the event lasted for 12 hours. But yes, very early on, Doro Bush, the daughter of George H.W. and Barbara, pushed her father in his wheelchair. He looked for a few minutes at the casket and the funeral bier, and then she turned him around, and he greeted dozens of the mourners who were coming through to pay respects to his wife, shaking their hands, pausing for a moment, smiling. And so, yes, he took a very personal interest in that and decided he needed to be there to greet some of the people who weren't the VIPs, weren't on the invited list today, but people who just either knew or didn't know Mrs. Bush and admired her regardless, Pete.
Right. Jim Ryan from ABC News, live from Houston. Thank you, Jim. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you.
I mean, talk about an American treasure. 92 years old, that's a great run right there, but still sad today, Barbara Bush being laid to rest. Pete McMurray in for John Williams. We'll check headlines. We'll check news coming up next on 720 WGN.
They have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago, my hometown.
10:37, Saturday morning, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. What's with Chicago? Why don't we put ketchup on our hot dogs? Does anyone outside Chicago know what a 16-inch softball game is? What is a cheeseburger? In studio is the author of the book, What's with Chicago? She has a book signing today at the Barrington Area Library from 1 to 4. It's Ellen Schubart. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I love this book.
I'm glad you did.
Do people outside Chicago understand how different we are?
Well, I think in some ways they do. Every city is different. There are some common things about cities, streets, City Hall, police, but then there's everything that makes a city different.
I feel like Chicago has so many quirks.
It does. It has a lot of interesting things in terms of where we live, what we look at, the lake and the river together. Nobody else has that kind of wonderful thing.
The number one thing that I hear from people, and I want to know if you hear it too, especially people that move here from New York, what do they say?
They say it's clean.
Clean!
Yes.
Chicago is so clean. I can't believe it.
That's right, because their garbage is picked up in New York in front of their house.
Right.
And in Chicago, it's picked up in the back of your house, and so you don't see it. It's great.
Can we talk food? Let's talk ketchup on hot dogs. We teased this about 10 minutes ago. Where did that start, no ketchup on hot dogs?
Well, the hot dog that you know started at the 1893 World's Fair when two guys who formed Vienna Beef come up with a kosher hot dog for the Jewish immigrants that were coming from Eastern Europe. It was called a Wiener or a Frankfurter, Vienna or Frankfurt, mm-hmm. with the two cities. And it was just in a bun with mustard on it. When World War I comes and nobody wants to be German anymore because of the affiliation, they changed the name to hot dog. Now we got a hot dog in a bun with mustard. When the Depression comes, people start selling hot dogs on the street, and they, what they call, drag it through the salad. And so you get all those other ingredients, the tomatoes, the onions, the pickles, the relish, and all of that. Those are all salty, sour kind of tastes.
Yeah.
If you put ketchup on it, you drown it all out because ketchup is too sweet. And that's why we don't put ketchup on our hot dog, because we have all that other good stuff to savor.
So drag it through the salad. I've already heard drag it through the garden.
Yeah,
same thing.
Through the garden. Exactly.
How do you have your dog?
I have it just the way it comes, with everything, including the hot sport pepper and the celery salt, and no ketchup.
You go hot peppers on your dog.
You bet.
Wow. What about beef sandwiches?
I do the same thing there, too.
You go hot peppers or sweet peppers?
Both peppers. I ask for both.
Wow. Are you a Chicagoan? Did you grow up here?
I am. I'm a born and bred Chicagoan.
So you've seen it year after year.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's been a lot of years. So, yes.
I had no idea until I started reading your book, What's With Chicago, that the Twinkie was invented in Chicago?
Yes, it was. It was out at the Hostess factory. They used to make strawberry shortcakes in the spring when strawberries were very big. And then they had these pans and they didn't know what to do with them for the rest of the year. And the gentleman who invented the Twinkie took the name from a shoe store where they had Twinkie boots, Twinkie shoes, and put it onto this thing, which was originally a yellow cake with a banana filling. But then during World War II, bananas were in short supply, so they go to the cream filling. And, of course, the most famous thing about Twinkies is the thought that they never spoil.
They last forever.
They last forever.
When was the last time you had a Twinkie?
I don't eat Twinkies, I'm sorry to
Domati,
say.
Domati, have you had a Twinkie in the last 5 years?
I haven't had a Twinkie in so long. But I didn't know that about Chicago inventing the Twinkie.
Yeah.
What was the fact that you found out about Chicago that even you didn't know before you really started digging into all of this?
Well, there weren't too many things, but I had to check a lot of things that I thought were urban myths. For example, the water tower. Why did the water tower make it through the fair? Well, it turns out there was a guy who was the superintendent of the water pump station, which is across the street, who took wet sheets and wrapped it to try and make sure that the building would survive when the fire came by.
Chicago Fire.
The Chicago Fire, 1871. So that's why that particular symbol of Chicago's I will is so important.
So you also do, in your spare time, architectural tours.
Yes.
So you know everything about downtown.
Well, I don't know everything about downtown, but I'd like to think I know a lot. I do. I am certified to give 20 tours. The tour I like to give the best right now is the L. I go around on the loop L with people and talk about...
Wait, there's tours on the L?
There are tours on the L. Yes,
really?
Yes.
I had no idea. I've only been on the boat tour.
There's 85 different tours that the Architecture Foundation has.
Well, I know they have buses and they have boats. What else do they have?
Well, most of it is walking, but we are in the neighborhoods. We do a open air bus into Chicago's historic neighborhoods. We go to Bronzeville, Pilsen, Greektown, and Chinatown. We have a new Chinatown tour starting. We have tours in some of the neighborhoods like Logan Square. We have tours. We have a bus tour that runs every month with different topics. So I'm not sure what the next one is, but they're going to have one on murals of Chicago.
Okay.
And
I like that.
Yeah.
This is good to know. This is good information.
Oh, yeah. And every August they do Emerging Chicago. So it changes every year.
Ellen Schubart in studio with us. What's With Chicago? She has a book signing today in Barrington from 1 to 4 at the Barrington Area Library. Let's get back to the original water tower for a second.
Yeah.
So the Chicago Fire.
The Chicago
and
Fire.
And then what year was that?
1871.
1871. So we have the Chicago Fire. How long did it last?
Lasted 3 days. 300 people are killed. Over 1,000 structures are destroyed. A real tragedy.
Gone.
But it also opens up the opportunity for Chicago to become what they call a tabula rasa, just a blank slate, and we can begin to build. And it comes exactly at the same time that we have these new inventions like the telephone and the telegraph and the elevator brake, all of which allow us to begin to build new buildings. And that's why Chicago is the birthplace of the skyscraper.
Is that when the grid started?
No, the grid starts much earlier.
Okay.
The grid is it's in the same period of time. It didn't start with the fire. There was a grid here early on. And the remainder of the grid, besides the fact that you know that almost all our streets are straight and at right angles, is Block 37, which is in downtown Chicago.
Right.
It's a multi-use building. It's on the grid Block 37. Block 1 starts at where the river and the lake intersect, mm-hmm. right over here, and then it goes Block 2, Block 3, Block 4, and so on. So Block 37 is still retaining the name of its block of development.
I've been married 17 and a half years in Chicago with my wife, Sarah, and I try to get her to learn the grid. I have a 12-year-old that knows the grid, okay?
Yeah.
I go, Sarah, Addison's 36. Just remember 36, and we'll figure out addresses. Oh, I can't do that. I can't.
Move.
She just won't do it.
Well, move to the South Side, because then it's easy.
It is.
It's 49th Street, 50th Street, 51st. Yes, they know exactly what you want. You're on the North Side.
She has no interest. Let's go around the horn here. Griff, do you know the grid in Chicago?
Do I? I'm aware of it.
Okay.
For sure.
Belmont's 32, Addison 36,
I don't have
Irving
that information.
4,000. You don't know this?
Mm. Another millennial thing. Google Maps, man.
Come on! Goma G?
That's absolutely true. And I'm married to a guy from the South Side.
Okay.
He knows the grid, but he's had to learn it. It's very foreign to Southsiders.
I knew the grid before I got here.
I see. Well, do you also know that all of our angle streets, like Ogden and Archer and those, are old Indian trails that Daniel Burnham kind of put in and said, we ought to make these the streets where we can get most of the bigger traffic and then let the side streets do lesser traffic.
Really?
Yeah.
So Elston, Clybourne, which I'm on all the time.
Exactly.
Really?
All of those.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Ellen Schubert, I love this book. We got a lot to talk about today.
Sure.
I mean, we still have to talk about a little more food, but the skyscraper was born here in Chicago?
The skyscraper was born here in Chicago. The first skyscraper. A skyscraper is a building that's held up by a metal frame. And the first one was the Home Insurance Company building. It's now where the it's a Bank of America building. It used to be LaSalle Bank building. It's over on LaSalle, between LaSalle and Clark on Adams. And the Home Insurance Company was there. It was designed by William LeBaron Jenny. From there, we expand and we have lots of commercial buildings. They're called the commercial style. They're in three parts. There's a base, there's a repeating shaft, and then up at the top, there's some kind of cornice or something that sticks out, something that makes your eyes stop. Because when they were building these buildings in the 1880s, 1890s, people were afraid the buildings were going to fall down. This gives you a little stability. Now, you think about it, the buildings that I'm looking out over here from Michigan Avenue, they're flat-roofed because by the 1960s, when these buildings were built, of course, everybody knew buildings aren't going to fall down.
Right.
And the ornament is gone. It isn't the same. So the initial buildings, the skyscrapers, are built here. The famous architects are Halliburton and Root and Louis Sullivan, and we get a lot of we're the birthplace of the skyscraper.
God, you're good. I mean, you're a Chicago treasure. This is right off the top of her head, by the way. You can see Ellen today at the Barrington Area Library from 1 to 4. The book is called What's with Chicago? I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back.
Sure.
We're going to talk pizza.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you, since you do the architectural tours, I'm going to ask you what your favorite building is in Chicago, and I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
Which you can see out the Allstate Showcase studio. Just,
right.
That's a little hint. It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN in studio with us. Her name is Ellen Schubert. Her book is called What's with Chicago? Signing her book today at the Barrington Area Library from 1 until 4. I want to talk pizza before we talk architecture. deep dish or thin?
Chicago is the home of deep dish pizza. It was founded here at Uno's and then later Due's. Restaurants that were founded by Ike Sewell, and it's something that is uniquely Chicago. It's also been said to be just a bowl of tomato sauce, but Chicagoans love John Stewart on TV.
Oh yeah, I remember
attack Chicago pizza, but Chicago also is just a plain pizza town because we had a large number of Italian immigrants early in the 1870s, and their influence can be found all over the city. So you can find deep dish of lots of different kinds. Stuffed is another variation, and it just means a pizza that is baked for a very long time with a lot of cheese and the tomato sauce on the top to protect the cheese from the long stay in the oven.
Do you fold your thin crust?
No, I get the little squares.
I get the squares, but I still fold.
You still fold them?
And people still yell at me.
That sounds
What are you, from New York?
You're exactly.
No, I just like to eat pizza faster. That's why. Yes.
Well, that's a New York thing, to fold the pizza.
312-981-7200. Tom, you're on with Ellen Schubert. The book is called What's with Chicago? What's your question for?
I love it. I think I'm going to go get the book because I thought I knew a bit about Chicago as a fourth-generation guy. But before I get to my question, don't get all about the grid on the south side because it doesn't go by 8th until you get to 31st Street.
Okay.
All
point right. taken.
Anyway, Chi-Town. It seems like every time you turn around over the last couple of years, all of a sudden we've you were using this term Chi-Town for this, that, or the other thing. And it used to be that we would just sort of glare at somebody that used that term and advise them that that's not what we're known as. Is that the battle we've lost?
We may have, but it's as I was saying when we were off the air, it's not a nickname that Chicago likes to have because it's related to Chirac, the Spike Lee movie thing, which is pretty negative. We've had a lot of nicknames in our history, starting out with Mudhole on the Prairie. Then we get to Hog Butcher of the World, City of Big Shoulders, the mm-hmm. I Will City. All of these things are much more attractive to talk about Chicago, even Second City, which was meant as a denigration of the city, right. Has been taken up to say, sure, we're second to none. That's better. And I would continue, if I were you, to glare at people who use the term Chi-Town.
The people that use Chi-Town are usually from out of town.
Yes.
That's why I never liked that term.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk skyscrapers.
Okay.
What's your favorite building?
You asked me about my favorite building.
Can I tell you mine first?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's right through the Allstate Showcase Studios. Yeah. I think the Wrigley Building is the most beautiful building.
It is a stunning building, and it was built to be the gateway to what was going to become the Magnificent Mile. It was built as a showcase. It is gorgeous. It was also built by William Wrigley as a reminder of what was here at the 1893 World's Fair. All the fair buildings were white, so is that one. All of them got lit up at night, so does that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a European style. This one is modeled after a cathedral in Seville. I'm not a real modernist person, but I love the Inland Steel Building. I think it's a gorgeous building. It stands there proudly. It gives you what...
Now, where is that? Remind me where that is.
That's right across the street from the Daly Center
on
Dearborn Street.
Yep.
And Monroe. And it is all glass. And it was an advertisement for Inland Steel. They didn't make stainless steel, but they had a subsidiary that did. So they put stainless steel all over it. So it's beautiful. And it's a very modern building in that they have big open spaces. That was part of what modernism brings in. Wide open floors where you can do anything. You can have a dog washer or a legal office in the same space. Mies didn't care. You just get a space.
What do you think of Tribune Tower?
I love Tribune Tower. I think tourists love it, too, for all the stones that are in.
The people right now are staring at this building,
exactly.
Looking at all
there's
the stones. 50,
there's one from each state in the Union, and then there's also things like Abu Simbel and the Great Wall of China and all of this, and it is a real attraction.
Can you explain that again to people? Because some people, they come downtown, they see Tribune Tower, but they don't know about the bricks.
All right. Well, Colonel McCormick, who was the editor and publisher at the beginning of the 20th century, asked each of his foreign reporters to please send him a piece of something that is historic. He told them not to steal it. I'm not sure how they all got here. But there are chunks about 6 inches on each side that are set into the bricks of the Tribune Tower with the name of where the chunk came from.
All around the building.
All around the building.
It's beautiful.
All around the world.
Yes.
Almost certainly every continent and maybe not Antarctica, but everybody else has got it. And it's great fun to go look at it. But frankly, I like the Tribune Tower for all the stuff that's in the center of it, where it talks about freedom of the press,
the lobby.
First Amendment, beautiful
etched
lobby.
In stone,
yes.
In the lobby. If you've never seen it, yes.
Walk in.
What do you think about them gutting this, turning it into condos, and they're going to build the skyscraper in the parking lot behind us?
I think that this is part of what goes on all the time. And Chicago is somewhat unique. You can't ever say mostly, but it's almost unique in that we save our old buildings and we build new buildings. We are not destroying everything that is in the fabric of our history.
Right.
So saving the Tribune is terrific. The design for the new building, which would be the second tallest building in Chicago, may need a little bit of work. But I love Gordon Gill and Adrian Smith, who are the architects, so I'm not going to say too much about
it. Before you go, we got about 30 seconds left. You also have a chapter in your book about January 12th, 1979. The snowstorm.
The snowstorm that elected a mayor because our mayor then just stood and said, oh, you can park in city and city
we got
lots.
It taken care of. Don't worry about
right.
it. Then Jane Burden came in. And
she said, he said he would do it and he didn't. He shouldn't be the mayor. And he wasn't. It was Michael Bolandic.
The snowstorm of 79.
Right.
This is a great book.
Thank you very much.
You can meet Ellen today. I'm going to get your phone number because I'm going to have you back. I mean, you're just wonderful. You know everything about this city. What's with Chicago is the name of the book. They can get it everywhere,
Amazon. Including Amazon.
She'll be out in Barrington today if you want to stop by the library from 1 to 4. Ellen Schubart, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's 720 WGN.
WGN.
Guys! Look, honey, it's my brother Don and my Lowell.
Hey, you know what I was thinking? Why do cowboys always try to ride bulls? The bulls don't like it. They get so mad.
Let me answer your question with a question. Why do they call them cowboys if they ride bulls?
WGN. Our next guest will be doing two shows tonight at City Winery downtown at 5 and 8 o'clock. You can go to citywinery.com for tickets. We fell in love with him as anchor of Weekend Update on SNL. Subliminal Man. I love it.
Yeah, Larry, that's good.
You can see his series Hiking with Kevin on YouTube, and it's one of my favorite new shows you need to check out. Also, you can see him starring alongside Matt LeBlanc on CBS's Last Man Standing. It's Kevin Nealon. Thanks for coming in, man. Yeah, it's good to see
you. Thanks for having me, man. This is a great studio. We're just talking about how it's just like the windows of the world right here.
Isn't this great?
Yeah,
Michigan Avenue, Michigan people just Avenue. Walking by.
Unbelievable, man.
Looking at you, it's like, I know that guy from somewhere.
Yeah. Are those windows bulletproof?
They are.
Oh, good.
Yes. We think.
And that vest you're wearing, is that bulletproof?
Yes, it is a bulletproof vest nice. That I'm wearing. Last Man Standing. I could never do a sitcom because I feel like I crack up all the time.
Yeah.
I would be that guy. Does that happen to you?
We do crack up a lot. Which is fine. You know, when people would crack up on SNL, it was kind of hacky because, you know, they would do it a lot. They found out, you know, some of those casts, they would find out that, you know, it was a way to get laughs. And Lauren Michaels, a producer, would always say that's kind of like from the Carol Burnett era. It was kind of hacky and, you know, and he didn't like that. So he frowned upon that. So that was very rare when we did it in that show. But with Man with the Planets, shot in front of a live audience. So it's, you know, you could retake it and do it over again, you know. And the audience kind of likes it, you know.
Matt LeBlanc, pretty easy to work with.
He's really easy to work with. He's, you know, we all know him from Friends and episodes and from Top Gear. He's a busy guy. And he just...
Is he the most successful friend? Think about that. Because he's had so many successful series.
He might be.
Maybe Schwimmer with Madagascar, and he just did the OJ series.
Yeah, we'll have
on
to
FX.
Do a net worth check on them, you know. Maybe Jennifer Aniston. Who knows?
Man.
But you know what? Courtney Cox invests in real estate. That's really where Woody Allen made his money, real estate.
Is she really making money through real estate?
I think she flips a lot of homes and things like that. She's smart. But but Matt is just so so in tune to the sitcom thing. I mean, he knows exactly. He's so smart, such a pro. He knows about story and structure and characters. You know, if he sees something that's not right, he'll stop it because he's one of the executive producers on the show. And, you know, he's got everybody's back, and he's just done it so long. It's like second nature to him.
Really?
Yeah.
How about Stacey Keach?
Stacey Keach is really good, too. And I don't know that he's ever done a multi-camera sitcom, you know, in that traditional fashion.
Mike
Hammer.
Right.
Mike Hammer. But he's a really cool guy. I like him a lot.
And Swoozie
Kurtz. Yep. She comes in. She plays Stacy's wife. And
she is so hot. How old is she? Late 60s?
She's, believe it or not, people laugh when I say this, but she's 110.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that. She's a beautiful woman.
Yeah, she's very pretty. She's kept herself well. But yeah, Matt is just, and he could get like so many laughs out of just, you know, one joke from his expressions, the way the takes he does on it.
Right.
I mean, I've never seen anybody like that before. I mean, you would want to hire him immediately on your sitcom.
Well, when he did Joey, I thought it was a great takeoff from Friends. And then he did episodes on Showtime,
which
I thought was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this one, funny, too. Yeah. I mean,
and then he jets off to London during the hiatus period to do a show called Top Gear in London. It's on BBC.
So he's hosting that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's one of the hosts.
Wow.
Been doing it for a couple of years.
So tonight you're doing stand-up at City Winery?
Yeah, City Winery. Two shows, 5 and 8 o'clock. And it's a great room. You've been over there, right?
I love City Winery. It's one of my favorites in the city.
Yeah, it's so classy.
Who were Kevin Nealon's influences growing up? Who'd you look up?
Let me ask him. Jeff, who were your influences?
That's called a reset radio so people know who is in studio. Kevin Nealon.
That is good. I hear DJs do that sometimes. So let me ask you something, Kevin Nealon. When you first came to... when I was growing up, I loved... when I was much, much younger, I would read all the jokes in the back of the Parade, my favorite jokes in the back of the Parade magazine.
Parade magazine, yeah. Every Sunday, sure.
That's right.
And I forgot about those. Those that's great. Right.
And then, but as I got older, you know, the guys that really influenced me were like Steve Martin and Albert Brooks and Andy Kaufman, because they were so unique. They were so different. And they were kind of like magicians in a way, because you didn't know what they were going to be doing next, right. And how they did that and why did that get a laugh. And, you know, so I kind of liked that. And I tried to emulate, you know, myself on that when I started off. It's funny, when you start off doing stand-up, everybody's doing some comic that you know. When I was in the clubs at the time, everybody was doing either, Woody Allen or Richard Pryor or Steve Martin.
Right.
Or, you know, whoever was popular at the time.
Richard Pryor, of course, Peoria's own. I grew up in Peoria. That was a big deal. He came back to town, had a heart attack. He was in the hospital for a while. It was a big deal. Richard Pryor. Sam Kinison, also from P-Town. Were you a Kinison guy?
I was. I knew Sam. He hosted SNL when I was there, and I knew him from the clubs. Nice guy. Nice guy.
What was he like? We used to have him on when I was an intern in college. I thought it was the coolest thing that Sam Kinison would wake up early and come over and do our morning show. I was an intern at the time. And then you look back, he was out all night.
Yeah, he wasn't waking up. He was on his way home.
He was out all night. Yes. No wonder he came in at 6 a.m. Yes. Like, I'll stop by and see these guys.
Yeah, he was a really sweet guy. You know, the times I talked to him off stage and stuff, he was very kind of quiet and very sweet and compassionate.
Who makes you laugh now? Because I have comedians in all the time, and it's like, okay, you know, some make me laugh.
Well, I will tell you who makes me laugh the most. It's kids, little kids that aren't comedians, because they're just so naive and they're innocent. And the things they just say things that are so unintentionally funny.
Right.
You know, one of my kids is with his other buddy. You know, they're just hilarious. You hear them listen to them talk in the backseat of the car.
Oh, yeah.
I laugh so hard. I there's so many comics that I like, and there's so many comics out there now. You know, I work with a guy named Kirk Fox, who has a new Showtime special out. He's really funny. There's guys like, there's just so many of them.
Do you have friends that you say to yourself, why isn't that guy a comedian? Or why isn't he in movies? Because he's so damn funny and he sells insurance.
Yeah.
I have so many buddies like that.
Yeah, I know. I have a brother that's a year older than me. And all of his friends go, Mike, you should be doing the comedy. You're way funnier than Kevin, man. I'd say, yeah, he's funny, but he's like, he hasn't learned how to refine his comedy yet. You know, he hasn't gotten it like into that, you know, sellable place. You know, you can't just have wild comedy out there. You got to kind of rope it in. And, you know, he's more of silly. And it also takes him a couple of wines to get to that place.
Don't you love that? The friends throwing you under the bus.
You should be
in movies. You should be doing this.
Yeah.
Kevin Nealon in studio with us tonight. Two shows at City Winery. You can go to citywinery.com. SNL, they have the exhibit at the Broadcast Museum right downtown. We're going to give away tickets in a second. But it is so cool to walk through, you know, 40 plus years of that show.
They have one here in town?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It started in New York. It didn't do too well in New York. It came to Chicago and it blew up.
Wow.
I mean, we embraced it here.
Could be a restaurant in line for that.
You want to stop by? I can get you tickets today.
That'd be awesome, man. That'd be awesome.
When you look back, some of your fun days?
Yeah,
SNL?
Definitely. Definitely some of my fun days. That was... that was one of the highlights of my career, doing that show, because it totally came out of nowhere for me. You know, I was friends with Dana Carvey.
Okay.
In a nutshell, I was friends with him, and we were sharing a house together in Hollywood Hills. He would live in the studio apartment above the garage when he was in town. He lived in San Francisco. And I shared the house with a couple of the comics. You don't know any of them. And and Dana was up for SNL, and he got it that summer. And I was dating Jan Hooks at the time, and she was up for it.
Right.
And I was excited for both of them. And I didn't even think about getting on the show, because I'm a stand-up, just a really good stand-up, you know?
Of course, yeah, you're really good.
And so so Dana got, you know, he moved to New York that summer to get ready to be on the show that fall. And I got a call from him one night. He goes, Kev, I'm out at Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's in the kitchen? I said, who? He goes, Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. Anyway, Lorne Michaels is looking for one more cast member. I said, Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray are in the kitchen? Yeah. He goes, anyway, they may want to see your tapes, Lorne Michaels. I said, I can't believe they're in the kitchen. You know? He goes, I got to go. Somebody's coming. So he hangs
You weren't
up.
Even thinking about
no,
that.
It would, no, I would never get on that show. So I sent my tapes in just to kind
By
of...
By the way, he calls you from a landline. I love that. From Lorne Michaels' house.
Back then, yeah. Yeah, it can
no
be traced.
Cell phones.
No cell phones. Maybe there were, but they were big, bulky ones, like you see on Seinfeld.
The bag phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The battlefield phone.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple weeks later, I got a call from him again. Kev, I'm back out of Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's in the kitchen? Steve Martin. I said, you're kidding me. No. Anyway, Lorne liked your tapes. I think they're going to fly you in for an audition. I said, Steve Martin's in the kitchen. So the next day I know, I fly in for an audition, and I'm never going to get it. I know I'm not going to get it, so I'm not nervous. Everybody else is nervous.
Right.
People here from Second City and the Groundlings in L.A., they're all pacing and sweating, and I'm just, it's a free trip to New York for me.
Sure.
And I do my little, my audition, and...
What was it, by the way?
Oh, I don't even remember. It was some stand-up I did on The Tonight Show, and maybe some of the characters Dane and I used to work on in the driveway.
Okay.
You know, when we're... And I fly home. And
don't mind that voice in the background. Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in front of Lorne Michaels in a high-rise in Beverly Hills, and he's offering me a job at SNL. So the next thing I know, I'm at Lorne Michaels' house, and I get a call from Dana Carvey. He goes, Kev, I'm back at Lorne Michaels' house. Guess who's in the kitchen? I said, I'm in the kitchen now, mother. Tough guy.
I love that.
Yeah.
You had no idea. That's why you got it.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
you didn't
I showed
care.
Up. Because I showed up. Not knowing.
Kevin Nealon in studio with us. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about your YouTube series, which I absolutely love.
Thank you.
Because you get stars when they're just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
And just pure funny.
They're just, it's their downtime, and they're just kind of open, and it's fun.
It's good stuff. Kevin Nealon, you can go to citywinery.com for tickets tonight. Two shows at 5 and 8 at 720 WGN.
When you do characters like Ed Grimley or Jiminy Glick.
Now, do we hold for applause? Because you're going to
do some post this, right?
Yes. Okay, go ahead. So say it again.
When you do characters like Ed Grimley.
Hold. Go.
Jiminy Glick.
Hold, hold, hold. Really hold. Go.
720 WGN, Kevin Nealon in studio with us. You can see him tonight. Citywinery.com for tickets. 5 and 8 o'clock, his two shows. That was Hiking with Kevin, and that was Martin Short, who I think is one of the funniest men.
So funny.
Men on the planet.
Yeah, he's so funny, and he loves it. He loves the business.
Well, he loves to make people laugh.
Yeah.
He was
just
trying to get you to laugh during that.
Yes. And as I look back on the whole hike, it was like constant put downs the whole time. It was like a very subtle Don Rickles.
You're right.
Yeah.
Explain to people that have never seen it. Because it's hugely popular. I think I watched three yesterday.
Wow, binge watching. That's a lot of hiking.
You carry your camera on a selfie stick. Your phone. It's just
iPhone.
Your phone.
Yeah, it's my iPhone at the end of a selfie stick. And the stabilizers are pretty good now in those phones, so it's not as shaky as it used to be. And sometimes I'll use a Steadicam on there too. But what happened was I asked a friend of mine, Matthew Modine. He's an actor. He was in Full Metal Jacket.
Right, of course. He's got great hair.
Yeah, good guy. Yeah.
What was the wrestling movie?
What was
Vision
that?
Quest.
Yeah, Vision Quest.
Yeah, he
That's
wore
right.
the plastic suit.
Yes. And he also did a stint on Weeds for, a good story arc on Weeds.
Stranger Things, he was on
yeah,
there.
Stranger Things, he's on now. So I call him, and he lives nearby me, and I call him and say, hey, Matt, you want to go for a hike in the canyon near my house? I hadn't seen him in a while. He goes, yeah, that'd be fun. So I thought, when we were hiking, I thought, wouldn't it be funny, a sketch, like if I was interviewing him, and I was so out of breath, you couldn't understand what I was asking him, and he was so out of breath, you couldn't understand his answers. You're like,
Which
so,
you
Matt,
are sometimes.
Matthew, when you first started coming to Hollywood, you got thank you. I did do that. So we did that, and that was funny. But then on the way down, I started asking him other questions about, did you turn down any any movie parts you regret? He goes, oh my God. He goes, I just came off Full Metal Jacket, and I got tons of offers to do different movies, and I turned down a lot that I regret. And for instance, Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox role.
Oh gosh.
Top Gun, Tom Cruise
what?
Role.
Yeah. Oh man.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, you know, no.
Yeah, Big. The movie Big, the Tom Hanks role.
Jeez, yes. You're kidding.
No, but he's a happy guy, and he still works. So
wow.
So I thought this would be great to maybe do a different person each week, a notable person. Doesn't have to be a comic or anything or an act. I've done Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I've done Brad Paisley, Chelsea Handler, Conan O'Brien, Adam Sandler, tons of people.
Okay, let's talk about Conan, because I just watched that yesterday.
Okay.
What's with the hat? Conan had this hat on.
Yes.
From, it looked like he borrowed it from Otis from Mayberry.
Yeah. He didn't realize how popular the show was going to be and people would be watching it. He thought it was just a little YouTube thing. But yeah, it is funny to watch what people wear on a hike. Like Dana Carvey came on and he looked like a beekeeper. You know, he had a big old hat on with a netting around it.
Well, you get some great answers because even though they're on camera, their guard is down because they forget that they're on TV. Or they're going to be on YouTube.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's outside of a studio, and they feel a little more... I think when people are walking, they feel more comfortable. Whenever I was hiking before any of this, I would pass people, as many people do. You pass them, and they're always in conversation. And they're talking about so many different things. And they have so much to say when they're hiking. I don't know if it's connected somehow, walking and talking. But it certainly is a nice venue to kind of talk to people.
Hiking with Kevin, you can find it on YouTube. Adam Sandler.
Yeah, it's a YouTube, youtube.com/ Kevin Nealon Comedy, if you want to get right to it.
Or channel, you can just type in Hiking with Kevin.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
right in there, and then subscribe to the channel, which is nice.
Yeah.
You had Adam Sandler on, and you asked him a question that kind of stuck with me. You asked him if he could ever go back to that small apartment in New York. And without missing a beat, he said, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I think when you get to celebrity level, it's like life was so simple then. Even though you wanted to be super rich, you would like to go back to that simple life.
Yeah, and I think about that often too. I think, you know, I see friends that are starting out in the business and they really have nothing and they're hopeful, which is great, but they live in a studio apartment and they have no mortgage. They're not, you know, feeding a lot of people, you know, they don't have a bunch of
kids calling them. Yeah. Yes.
I think, man, how nice is that? And of course they don't see it that way. You know, they want what I have, you know.
Of course.
But the questions, I try to keep them random and kind of off kilter a little bit. Like I hiked with Caitlyn Jenner. And I thought of a question to ask her.
Did she wear heels? I didn't see that one.
I don't think she did, no.
Okay.
But I said, Caitlin, if you could change one thing about yourself, what would you change? I thought that was a great question. Yeah. She I don't think she got it, but she said, I probably my nose. And then she said, no, I'm kidding.
We have two pairs of tickets. Griff, we're going to do two pairs. We'll do caller number 7 and caller number 8. 312-981-7200 for the exhibit at the Broadcast Museum downtown, the SNL exhibit, which I thought was just fantastic.
What was your favorite exhibit?
You can actually go in there and sit on the set of Weekend Update, which you hosted.
I've done
that.
Or
you can sit on the couch of Wayne's World. Or you can stand, they have a replica stage of the actual stage, the one in New York.
Can you dress up in the Hans and Franz sweatsuits?
I don't. Well, you can on your own and show up if you want. Yeah.
Nice.
You want to give me a little Hans and Franz?
Let me tell you something, my friend. Hear me now and believe me later. I could stretch your love handles into a bag and you could climb into the bag and carry yourself out of the trash, you pathetic girly man.
Where did Subliminal Man come from?
Subliminal Man came from, I was doing stand-up comedy before I went to SNL and it was part of my act. And I would just kind of tag, you know, I throw words in there.
Right.
And that came from a guy, Ed Peck, who was a character actor, a friend of mine, good friend of mine. He's passed away. And, but not from my doing. He pulled me aside once and, he said, Kev, let's go to Canner's. I want to show you this little thing I do called tagging. And, so we go to this deli and he's tagging the waitress and he's fitting words in there. That she, you know, she doesn't hear because he flips them in there fast. He goes, I think I'll have he had a really deep voice. He goes, all right, honey, I think I'm going to have the hamburger, your treat. And I also, why don't you give me, no, you know what he was doing? He was doing really vulgar words.
Was he?
Yeah. I'll loosen it up a little bit. I'll tell you what, honey, why don't you give me the hamburger? And also, why don't you give me like a milkshake on the side? That's X, and we'll call it a day.
It's come so natural to you, it seems like, when you do Subliminal Man. You can just jump right into it.
Well, it's you know, after a while, it does come natural. But it was the first sketch I ever did in SNL, and I was terrified because, you know, it's like two conversations at once. And I remember right before I went on, a couple seconds before, Lorne Michaels, you know, coming back from commercial, Lorne Michaels puts his hand on my shoulder. He says, are you sure this is what you want?
What? Why would he do that?
I was just trying to lighten the load, I guess.
Of course. Nice. Kevin Nealon, good to see you again, man.
Yeah, you too, Peter.
Thanks for having me. You can see him tonight, City Winery. Go to citywinery.com. If you want to go to the SNL exhibit on your way back to your hotel, I can get
you. That would kind of like be going back to work. Well, I got to check next week.
I think you'd love it. You know, yeah. There's stuff about, you know, Colin Quinn. When was the last time you
like,
saw
I
him?
I would be like disappointed that it wasn't all about me.
Right,
there,
of course.
You
know? Yes.
Where's my no depth perception guy?
Right. You know, where's the Hans and Franz, I think their costumes are in there.
Yeah, okay.
You can see yourself. Kevin Nealon, everybody, is 720 WGN.
Incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack. Bad Augusta. He's on his final hole. This crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story out of nowhere. A former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
WGN, Pete McMurray in for John Williams. A new restaurant opened in Rosemont this week, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack. Eat, drink, and be Murray. He's number 7 in the Murray family, number 1 at the restaurant. It's brother Andy Murray in studio. It's good to see you, buddy.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks.
You've been
for
a little
me.
Busy.
We've been very busy. It's off the charts. People just keep coming in, and I'm thrilled, excited. I can't believe it.
I was there last Friday. You had a soft opening for friends and family, mm-hmm. and I was there, and it was packed that night. And then you've just been going ever since.
It hasn't stopped. The soft opening, I was surprised I had that many cousins.
Wait a second. Not a Murray. It's a McMurray.
It's a McMurray.
Right.
Yeah.
With your brother, of course. You can't show up alone.
No, no. But I had a lot of relatives coming for the soft opening. But it's since we'd finished the press conference on Tuesday, there was a line waiting to get in, and it hasn't stopped.
So your brother Bill came in.
Billy came in.
First time he's seen the restaurant?
First time he's seen the restaurant. He was pretty happy with it. And actually, he came back the other night after his show at the Chicago Theater, and we had a dance. He wanted a dance party, so we closed the restaurant down. We brought a DJ in, and Tom Ricketts showed up, and all these people. And it's like, hey, okay, we're going to dance now.
That is so funny. So you're just like everybody else. You're families.
We're just family. That's
right.
All. It was just, you know, we're all pretty close. We all still talk. Billy just called me when I was in the green room. He wanted to know, well, how's the restaurant doing? I said, well, I told him the numbers from yesterday. He was like, what?
Well, you're getting some great press. Here's the thing. We have very similar families. I have 7 brothers. I come from a family of 12. You come from a family of 9. You have a nun. I have a nun. I could never, I don't think I could ever go into business with my brothers.
Billy's been actually a wonderful business partner. He understands the business. He understands ups and downs, and he gives you some slack. Some of the other brothers, no, I wouldn't go into business with them.
John, I'm not sure. Yes,
I don't know about that. And Brian.
Brian Doyle, he seems very set in his ways. Yes.
Yeah, he's getting to be an old curmudgeon.
Well, it happens. This is what I love about the city. You're always one person away from somebody. So I've known Joel for a few years, and then I met you a few years ago at Joel's outing, and then we went out one night, and we started talking, and I found out that my uncle, my mother's brother, was your coach growing up.
He was my church league basketball coach in high school.
Uncle Phil Corey.
Phil Corey is one
and
of
well met.
My favorite people in the world. I love Phil Corey.
He loves talking about your family because he doesn't understand. Well, he always called your mother a saint, and you guys were crazy. He said all the boys were nuts.
That's partially true. Yes, but what about the sisters? The sisters are just about as crazy as we are.
I met 2 the other night. Yeah, I've never met the sisters before.
Oh, you didn't meet the sister of the sister?
Though. No, I have not met the sister of the sister.
God. She walks into the, you know, as she will tell everyone.
Yes, of course.
I am the only one in the family with a degree in drama. but she walks into a room and she's looking for the spotlight. It's like she's coming on stage.
Of course. What was it like in the Murray family growing up? Were you guys always performing at home? How did everybody get into show business?
I think it all started at the dinner table. You know, my father had a very dry wit. My mom was very funny, too. But my older brothers, if they could make my dad laugh,
It
was a big deal. And then I had friends who would come over to the dinner table that would plead to be invited to come over. so they could be insulted.
Because it was just pure comedy, yeah, sitting at the Murray table.
You just had to duck because the one-liners were coming over.
Of course. Now, your father passed away young, and your mother raised all the kids.
Yeah, my dad died when he was 46.
That's way too young.
It was way too young. It really was. And my mom, she went back to work. She hadn't worked since the day she got married. So
right.
And all of a sudden, she was working in a mailroom at American Hospital Supply. And, you know, she worked there for a long time until Billy hit it big. And then.
Now, did you go see Bill when he was at Second City?
Oh, yeah.
You remember those times?
Yeah.
And did you know, when he got the call for SNL, I mean, what was that, 1978?
76? 76,
77. Yeah. Okay. That was a huge deal. Was that a big deal?
Oh, yeah.
To the family?
It was a huge deal, but we were like, well, what is this thing? We know Second City. And
because it was a brand new television show no one knew about.
And the Lampoon Radio. Well, first, he didn't, you know, he did the Howard Cosell Saturday Night Show first, he and Brian.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
No. What was that?
Howard Cosell had a variety show, and they were the primetime players. It was Billy, Brian, and...
Howard Cosell, who did Howard Monday Cosell, Night yes. Football, had a Saturday night primetime TV show, a variety show.
The Bay City Rollers opened up with that song Saturday Night.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so when Saturday Night Live started, they were the not ready for primetime players, just to throw it back at them.
Sure.
And then the next year, they called Billy and Billy. Well, Cosell's show got canceled and Billy went over to SNL.
And when did you know that he was going to be a star?
I knew it a long time. I knew it before he was even in Second City.
Really?
Yeah.
You knew he had it.
He just had this whole different thing about him that was nobody else had.
I mean, I've seen him a few times around Chicago. We did a charity event. He was my wiffle ball manager. The guy can't go anywhere without someone asking him for a picture. It's crazy. Even though he loves this city, it's got to be hard for him to come back here.
Well, next week's our golf tournament down in Florida, and he must take 3,000 pictures there.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And he always says yes to people, and he's nice.
Well, no, he doesn't always say yes. He says, you know, if people don't just come up and don't introduce themselves, it drives them crazy. He says, you know, where I came from, we introduce ourselves.
definitely. Andy Murray in studio. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll talk about the restaurant.
Thanks.
Okay. Caddyshack opened up. Caddyshack, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack, is a restaurant in Rosemont, right next to the Rosemont Theater. It's 720 WGN.
You got a pool over there?
We have a pond in the back. We have a pool and a pond. A pond would be good for you.
Caddyshack, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack, Eat, Drink, and Be Murray, opened this week in Rosemont, number 7 in the family. Andy Murray is here, and you've had your restaurant in Florida for 17 years.
Yes, sir.
And you're having your golf tournament, your annual golf tournament.
We have a Murray Brothers Caddyshack golf tournament. It's a two-day party. It's not really about the golf so much. There's 400 golfers on two courses. And
400 golfers?
Yeah. And a party Thursday and Friday night with about 2,000 people.
Now, I've done Joel's at...
Canal Shores.
Canal Shores, which is a zoo. How does this compare? Caddyshack.
multiply it by 10.
Oh, jeez. Wow. And you have a charity that you give the money to, right?
The Murray Brothers Foundation, yes. I guess we've given out over $6 million so far.
I mean, that's so impressive. Yeah. I mean, people do charity work, but you got to listen to the number. $6 million to go to a charity?
Well, it's people really want to play in this tournament, so they pony up the dollars, and we're able to give it to a lot of different people.
Right.
You know, a lot of first responders. There's a bunch of nuns in St. Augustine who like us a lot. So,
really? Yeah. Good for you guys. I mean, I love that, Chicago guys giving back.
Well, that's the way we were raised.
Now, you went to a grammar school at St. Joe's in
Wilmette.
In Wilmette.
Lincoln Ridge.
And where'd you go to high school? Did you go to Loyola or New Trier?
I went to Loyola freshman year, and I wasn't the best student. I was kind of a screw up in the Jesuits, and I did not see eye to eye.
Really? I'm shocked.
So I switched over to New Trier East, and they had girls, and it was like, oh my gosh.
That's a big deal.
And then my younger brother Johnny went to New Trier too, and after we screwed around at New Trier for that 4 years, my mother decided Joel was going back to Loyola.
Okay.
So
Joel loves talking about your youngest brother, number 9 out of 9. Joel loves talking about how he was captain of the football team at Loyola back in the day.
It was back in the day. I was actually his grade school football coach when he was in 7th grade. And then when he was in 8th grade, I became the coach at OLPH in Glenview.
Okay.
And we would play Joel's team. And it was a crazy – my team was pretty good, that OLPH team. But Joel threw like 300 yards against us that day. He was a pretty good quarterback.
Really?
Yeah.
So he was good? He wasn't just talk?
No, Joel's a pretty good athlete.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the restaurant. Murray Brothers Caddyshack in Rosemont.
It's a big, beautiful restaurant. You know, our concept really is it's really about giving people really high-quality food, good drink, and some great service, and making them feel, you know, I like to consider it like it's an extension of my living room. And I can't bring everybody home, but if I have this party house,
right? Yeah,
I can bring them there, and food and drink solves a lot of problems.
Oh, yes, it does. It really does. And you have Caddyshack posters around, but you also have posters from different movies.
We have different movies. We have a lot of family pictures. It's also about the family. There's a lot of family pictures that will show us how we grew up.
Well, my favorite picture is right when you walk in the door. There's a picture of all the brothers golfing.
Actually, that picture came from the Vineyard Vines. Actually asked us to do a part of a magazine shoot for
them. Are you kidding me? Nope. I thought that was on a golf course. I'm like, wow.
It was on a golf course.
I know, but you guys were golfing one day and someone snapped a picture.
it was a good picture. It was a great picture. And, you know, they said, yeah, you can do that. And they gave us all these clothes, and that was nice.
Okay, nice. Do you have, is it William Murray Golf? Do you have some golf gear?
Yes, I've got a lot of William Murray Golf. And actually,
you don't have to pay for it, do you?
No, not yet anyway. No, I'm supposed to get a whole spring line when I get back to Florida that's waiting for me.
How many times have you seen the movie Caddyshack?
I don't know. It's on 2 or 3 times a week on Golf Channel anyway.
A million, two.
It's over 100 times. I know that. Every time you see it, you find a new line that you didn't hear before.
Well, of course. I mean, and it always makes you laugh. It stands the test of time.
It really does.
Guys golfing, having a good time. Harold Ramis was a good friend back in the day. I love the guy. And he told us when he would write parts for your brother Bill, he would just leave them open. It's like, okay, Bill, dance in this scene, or Bill, you're going to be with the golfer. Or are you going to be doing this? There was no line. Bill just made it up.
No, Billy was only supposed to be there for like one day shooting, and then they kept calling him back and said, "Well, can you put something in here and put something in there?"
Right.
And they had a pretty good party down there when that was going on.
Oh, I heard all about that. Yeah. That's good stuff. Andy, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Continued success. I'll say hello to my uncle Phil, Corey. I'll see him tonight at dinner.
I'll see him at 9:30 Mass.
My mother's 83rd birthday was this week. We're having dinner at Angelo's in Villa Park tonight.
Oh, congratulations to Mom.
Yeah, Betty Ann. So Uncle Phil will be there at dinner. I'll tell him you came in.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yes. Caddyshack. You can't miss it. It's the Murray Brothers Caddyshack. Eat, drink, and be Murray right in Rosemont. It's 720 WGN. Amy Guth in studio coming up next. It's great to see you.
Good to see you. Always.
I never get to see a lot of people like Domati. It was fun working with him today, and Griff.
I know.
I don't know if Griff likes me or hates me, because I just feel like I'm a little bit too much for him.
The good thing about Griffin is that he has a healthy level of contempt for all of us. And it keeps us on our toes, and we love him for it.
Griff, are you okay? I'm like at 90 miles an hour, and Griff is very zen.
He's a grounding force in all of our lives.
I appreciate it. I didn't know that.
I may have sent you about 50 text messages yesterday, and I get one back. I'm like, does this kid not like me?
Oh, I thought we had a good exchange. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. No, that's cool.
I think we had the same number of texts. Yours are just longer.
I got a lot to
you
say.
You had the paragraphs, and then I would come back.
I do.
He'll come back and be like, cool.
Yeah. Great working with you, Griff.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Tell your dad thanks. I'm in for John Williams next week, which is nice.
Cool.
What do you have coming up? Anything?
Well, all the usual good things in the business world, but we're going to take a look at Crain's list of the best workplaces, which is something we've done in years past, and it's really interesting. They poll a lot of employees and kind of say, what is it like to work here? So it's pretty candid responses, and they take all that data and put it together, and we find out the best places to work. And they've also created a second list of the best places for women to work. Taking into account of polling female employees and tabulated those results. We're going to take a look at that.
Love it. All right. Have a great weekend.